Welcome to the Who's Counting podcast with Cleta Mitchell, the podcast about America's elections. Hello, welcome to this episode of Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. This is a podcast about everything having to do with elections, how elections are supposed to be run, how sometimes they're not run the way they're supposed to be, and what we as citizens can do about it. And today, we have a wonderful guest with us who is going to talk to us about some amazing work that she and fellow patriots in Tennessee are doing. And I want to welcome Kathleen Harms, who chairs the Tennessee Fair and Free Elections Coalition. So, Kathy, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us here. Thank you.
So let's start with a little bit about you. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself and your background and how you got involved in working on saving elections in Tennessee.
Well, I'm a grandmother. I live in the state of Tennessee for 10 years, spent a lot of time in New England, but we've made this home. This is our home. Our children are here. And when COVID hit in 2020, my daughter came to me and I was kind of happy that the next generation was interested in what was going on in their government. So we started a Heritage Sentinel group at my house, and it was a pretty good sized group. But then after the 2020 election rolled around and things kind of got a little bit more exciting around elections, we started a kind of a branch off into election integrity. And then after a while, I had determined that for my time, in order to do this, we really had to focus. And so we have I was focusing on elections for the longest time. And I had been getting requests to speak around the state. And because we only said three things: authenticate the voter, authenticate the count, and authenticate the ballot. Those three things. It's kind of pretty mindless. That's what I have to do.
Say those three things again.
Well, in right order, is authenticate the voter, authenticate the ballot, and authenticate the count. Three parts to any election. You have to have an eligible voter, you have to have an authenticated ballot, and you have to have a proper and an accurate count. So those were the three issues. So I started getting calls to talk to groups across the country, across the state, and that took a lot of time, but I was happy to do it just to help people understand there are no silver bullets here. There is not one thing that's an election. Elections have different parts and different components, but they are an ecosystem. You're not going to solve one thing with it. Everything kind of blends and goes because it is a process. It's not just one piece of an event. And so as I got deeper down the rabbit hole, I had already been working up in Nashville on other legislative issues. So I took that experience, a little bit that I had, and I bought myself my own TCA, Texas Code Annotated book from LexisNexis. And I started looking, what are the laws that we do have on the books? Because I'm hearing so many people and so many levels discussing elections. And then I was really blessed this last fall to meet with Andrea Gomez with Citizens for Renewing America, who said, you know, my focus is going to be to help start a state election coalition, which is really what was needed. You had people popping up everywhere, different voices, everybody fighting on different turf, so to speak. But we needed to come together as a state. And voila, Election Integrity Network. And Cleta, I was always a fan of yours. I got to know you by watching you on TV back with the Lois Lerner days. And I thought, if Cleta Mitchell's involved with this, we can do this, because this is someone with integrity. Election Integrity Network has a lot of integrity, and we know that they're working on many levels. And as soon as we started working with you, it changed everything for our state. And we were able to then launch last fall in Tennessee our own state coalition, and that's how we got started.
That's amazing. I love that. I love that. It's always gratifying to think that something that you're working on that people say, "Yeah, I want to do that." So that's great. So talk a little bit, Kathy, about tell us about your coalition. Tell us what kinds of things you have been working on. And I would like to drill down a moment. I really like the way you've broken that down. Authenticate the voter, authenticate the ballot, authenticate the count. That's pretty simple to say, but not easy to do.
No, not at all. And when you break it out that way, that's when you can start talking to people who get off on a tangent of one, just one thing. And let's, and I'm not, I'm, everything is important, but I'll give you a good, for instance, if you got rid of technology tomorrow in the election process, it doesn't mean you have a fair election, because we have discovered, because of the Citizens Research Working Group, all of the nonprofits that are involved in our elections. And we're really getting to the point where billionaires and millionaires are pouring so much money into the voter registration process, activating, and we'll get it, maybe get into this a little bit later, activating groups through that process. And that can change an election. How an election is administered can change an election. It's, technology is a critical component, and it is one of the working groups. And that's the great thing about the Election Integrity Network. It is a, it's a multifaceted national working groups that we can then glean from and develop and mirror those at the state level. And that's what we're trying to do. And in Tennessee, our biggest challenge is to change the narrative from the voter experience being the priority for our secretaries of state and flip that back to accuracy and fair and free elections. I know that we don't ever have to say somebody has bad motives in an election, but we do have to challenge the process. And I think that's healthy.
Well, I do too. You know, one of the things that I've become really realized that for decades, because as you point out, there are all these leftist groups, they're advocacy groups. They have a certain perspective, which is their number one concern or issue or goal is to do what they call expand the electorate. And it sounds good. It sounds fine to expand the electorate. I want everybody who is eligible to vote to register and vote and be an informed voter and participate. What I don't want is just to dump people into the system who may not even know they're in the system, and to have third-party advocacy groups and political operatives basically just herd them in to cast a ballot, whether it's informed or not informed, or they care about one thing, or they barely know anything about the election. And maybe they don't even want to vote. Maybe they don't want to register. But that, the whole idea of just expanding the electorate and what has happened as a result of that is that all these election administrators, just like you referenced, they think their job is to get people to go vote. Well, that's not their job. That's the job of the candidates and the political parties. And when I say things like this, they say, oh, you're a vote suppressor. No, I'm just saying everybody has a job to do. The job of the election administrator is to administer the elections so that they're conducted honestly in accordance with the law, and that people can get in and out and vote, and they know their vote, their ballots being counted the way they intended. I don't know, but honestly, that is, when I say that, they say that I'm an evil person, I can tell you, because I've got all the emails. I'm an evil person because I say, that's not the job of the election official.
And it's not their job, because it takes the eye off the ball of the more serious and concerning issues. When you change the narrative to becoming about a voter experience or just herding people in, as you say, to vote, then you create systems around that that are not necessarily safe. And I'll give you a good example, and it's one that you and I've spoken about, the vote center, for example.
Oh, now, yes. I want you to talk about this whole business of precinct versus vote center. This is a huge issue, and you're the number one person on this in the whole country.
Well, we're fighting it because we do have a constitution in the state of Tennessee that in Article 1, it speaks about free and fair, free and equal elections, and also about giving the General Assembly this narrow capacity to legislate, to make law, to allow people to vote in the precincts in which they may reside. Well, that sounds pretty clear cut until you start really getting into how they've kind of gotten around that. And again, that is, I believe, a lot of other groups that are not government groups have influenced that, because it also relates to the voter rolls. And it's not just the election process. It's the voter rolls. When you bring in these groups that come in and they do registering, and we found a loophole in our own election law just in the last few weeks, because I noted, because of Ned Jones and the fabulous work he does on citizens research, we had our groups doing the all-in challenge, looking at that on the college campuses and in other areas. Well, I got a call from Shelby County, from one of the great people that are working out there. And she sent me a text because of a group called Vote America, registering people, young people. They mobilized people in a nanosecond on buses for an activist purpose. And so now we're using, and you get these conglomerations and populations of specific demographics. And we all just saw there was an email that was sent out that they're going after the rural young voter. Well, how are they going to do that? Well, you got to get them where they live. And if they can go in and do this massive voter registration, sign them up and vote there, vote at that place, then you've got nobody checking the voter rolls. When you go back to precincts, our founders could never have anticipated the use of a machine to vote on any more than an atomic bomb. A pencil and a paper was probably all they ever thought about. Precincts where you live would not have ever been the idea that you can digitize a precinct. It was an analog thought that you live where you vote. And it's the only way, in my opinion, to have free and equal access. Because when you go to the idea that it's for the voter experience and convenience, now you have limited that experience for the convenience of certain populations, not everybody. So for instance, in my county, we have 7 early voting centers for early voting and 25 on election day. But we used to have 43 precincts. See, that is, how can you say that's free and equal access? And they're not in the anywhere possibly where you live. You might have to drive 10 miles to get to the voting booth. And that did happen in an election in August in a primary where they closed 5 of those 7 early voting centers for half of the election, half of the early voting process. They reopened them in the second half. Well, what happens, that's not equal distribution across the county. It's not in the neighborhood anymore. And then you just compound all of that after you get past the fact that it's suppressing vote. I think we have to use that term that the left learns. You are actually suppressing vote in the name of convenience, because what's convenient for an individual who's working in an office complex in a commercial area may not be convenient for the stay-at-home mom with small kids who could have gone down the street to her school and voted. So we're doing that. We could be, in my belief, in the data we've pulled, there is a case to be made for voter suppression. But then you get to the voter rolls. So now what do you have to do? You have to have a lot of technology to have a vote center, because you have ballot types in every county that every precinct could be different. So you could have 100 different ballot types. Well, you can't have paper floating around in a vote center for every ballot type. So they put them on a computer, right? Well, and you don't have poll books that you can look people up with, you know, pencil and paper and look them up. You have to have e-poll books. Well, that's putting your technology to work, but in a way that could be making your voting rolls very vulnerable, just technology-wise, plus the people working in those centers are not familiar with the streets. We had in Davidson County.
That's a very good point.
Well, in Davidson County in August, there was a huge mess up because of the change of redistricting, where thousands of people got the wrong ballot. So that is not a hypothetical problem. And so you may get the wrong ballot type. I had an election commissioner in another county get the wrong ballot type. An election commissioner in her own county got the wrong ballot type. But that's because we can't expect our volunteers and our wonderful people who work at the polls to understand all this technology. And when they're demonstrating this stuff, this young guy was looking at it one day at an e-poll book, and he looked at it, it was a Microsoft tablet. He was in the operating system in 5 minutes, and everybody's hair caught on fire in the room.
Oh, wait, stop. So you're saying that he was, when you say he was in it in 5 minutes, drill down on that a little bit. So you're standing there looking at a demonstration.
Right. He's at a demonstration in his county with one of the major election vendors, and they hand out the e-poll books for everybody to look at. And he's a young guy. He's a computer guy. He takes one look at it and says, oh, I could probably get into the system, you know, because he could. He said, you can't really call it hacking, but because it's just a Microsoft tablet made in China. And he said, he didn't mean to do anything wrong, but technically, everyone's like, well, you just committed a felony. And I said, I want them to charge him with a felony, because if they do, we'll just show how incredibly vulnerable this thing is. But you see, we layer upon layer without thinking we're doing, this is the unintended negative consequences of doing what they think is good.
Well, you know, the thing that is interesting to me is that I found a presentation that I had made 10 years ago in which I'd read an article about lawmakers from across the country from the progressive side had met in Washington, and they had come up with a list of all the things they were going to do to change our voting system. One of those was getting rid of precinct voting. That was on their list. I mean, and if you look at the list, they've done all of it. They've spent literally hundreds of millions of, if not billions of dollars, changing the way we vote. And you're right. I mean, when we're talking about precinct voting, it's the idea historically had been that everybody in a precinct all got the same ballot, because you had the same city council person, the same state rep, the same state senator, the same county commissioner, and Congress, and all, and so you all got the same ballot. They would know historically about how many people would be voting, so they knew how many ballots were needed. They could prepare the supply chain, and in most states, then they would, you know, you go in, you get your ballot. You know the people who vote there. They know the streets, as you point out. It's closer to home. It's close to where you live. And they have to reconcile before they can certify that the number of votes matches the number of ballots, matches the number of voters who voted. And that's all gone now. So it's a huge issue. It's a huge problem. We have to return to something that can be accountable, like you say. It can be accountable.
When you remove things, when you centralize anything, you lose control. You have to, because you're not down there at the granular level where you can check and balance all of these things. And it's not that the local election officials' fault that that has happened, but it has happened and it has to be rectified. And you saw in many states, and in our state, we had long, long lines at these vote centers. It's just common sense that when you limit the amount of places a person can vote, you're going to have longer lines.
But you know, one of the things they want to do, Kathy, I firmly believe that they want to create the long lines so that what's the answer then? Oh, well, let's all vote by mail. And there you have zero supervision, zero verification, zero accountability.
Well, we have already the technology and the major vendors for online voting.
Online,
the major vendors, and online integrating our poll books with them is, I think, just a disaster of an idea. We've seen these things come up as that there were problems in elections. I would venture a guess that most of them are in vote centers, because that's where the ballots are out of control. You know, we've talked with Garland many times about he wanted the ballot images, but then they can change the ballot image. So even in the state of Tennessee, I don't know a state where you can actually get your hands on those ballots themselves. And when you say you should be able to validate the amount of people who came in to vote to the amount of ballots, we tried to be able to reconcile what was on the tabulator count with just fingering how many ballots there were. We couldn't even get that passed this year in Tennessee.
Well, I think that we're going to have to do a major educational program, because I don't think that most, I was at a meeting earlier this week, and I made the statement with this group of people that they said, well, what would be some of the things you would do? And I said, I think we need to have a national program. Maybe we call it Do the Math. I don't know, but to reconcile, just like a grocery store clerk can't go home until the cash drawer balances. The bank teller can't go home until the cash drawer balances. And the idea, I said, you know, the number of votes that are certified out of a voting location needs to match the number of ballots. There needs to be, that's why we have chain of custody for ballots, so that if a ballot gets spoiled, well, you account for that. And, you know, and if it's a provisional ballot, you account for that. But the number of votes matches the number of ballots, matches the number of people who showed up to vote or who cast a ballot in that And these people looked at me and said, wait a minute, are you saying that that isn't done? We just assumed that that was the way it was done. I said, well, you would assume wrong. It's the way it should be done. And some state laws require it, but I promise you, it is not being done.
Well, when you go to vote centers, first of all, as you said, unless you're going to start doing geofencing to find out where people are going to show up, you're never going to have possible, you're going to run out of supplies. You're going to run out of ink. The technology we found out on those optical scanners are not made for that kind of volume. After so many ballots that are tabulated through them, they're supposed to be serviced. That's why we have so many of them breaking down.
Oh, so during the process, I didn't know that, Kathy.
Well, our technology person found this one out. And then, you know, you add to that the fact that in a precinct, there's by law, there's a limited amount of people. They're finite. There's 6,000 voters in our precinct in the state of Tennessee max. You can even make them smaller. You can then account for it. We just had a wonderful reorg of one of our political parties this week. And one of the big concerns was going to be how are we going to vote, because they had a state record turnout for this one county of 600 people. And so they didn't know how they're going to do it. Well, I've had so much resistance to a hand-marked paper ballot. They used a hand-marked paper ballot. They did run it through the scanner, which is where the backup was, but less than an hour, 600 people got through, because you can get through so many people with that secure hand-marked paper ballot. And you're only going to have that 600. If you've got 6,000 people registered, they don't all show up. You can account for that. You don't need as many early voting days. In our state, it's 5 to 20, but for some reason, everybody goes to the max. Wow. And you don't need that kind of time. But you could also then, I'm not going to say don't use optical scanners, but why, we have so many days after an election before we have to certify. Why don't we have a backup of a hand count to make sure that the optical scanner matched the actual ballot count? That's easy. It shouldn't, it's not a lot more money. It's probably cheaper. You would think I had lobsters crawling out of my ears when I made these kinds of comments.
Well, you know, one thing you always have to remember when you're talking to legislators is that they like the system that exists because that's how they got elected. So what could possibly be wrong with the system if it produced a wonderful legislative specimen such as me, you know? So
exactly.
It is a real educational process. And we're starting at the tail end of a 10-year, hundreds of millions of dollars campaign to, I think, you know, it's a narrative that people have just been brainwashed thinking, that all the election officials, that their job is to go out and get more people to vote. No, just make sure the equipment works. Make sure that you have transparency. Make sure you have accountability. Make sure the workers know what the statutes say. So, that's the thing that I think we've got a lot of work to do on that. And we're not going to be able to do that without the engagement of citizens. I just keep telling people, it's just like parents going to school board meetings. We just kind of said, oh, we just thought they were doing a good job and we didn't pay attention. And now we're paying attention. Now we're going, whoops, we need to be here.
Well, yeah, it's like you got to go in and clean out the barn once in a while and get the mice out because they're there and everything looks good on the surface, but you got to get past the window dressing. And I have learned the lesson that you have always said, be right, but be polite. Go into your election offices. And I am not in an adversarial relationship with the people who handle the elections. We're not in agreement, but you can be polite about not agreeing. On the other hand, after that whole thing that happened this week and they did the hand marked paper ballot, I made sure I sent a text and said, thank you. Job well done. Well done. You know, good for you. You figured out a way to do something that was going to be difficult. And even with our voter rolls and education, I think that's a real major key that you just picked up on. You're educating all of us. We all, and people intuitively have figured Rasmussen will tell you a lot. People don't trust our elections. They just right. don't. And our secretaries of state and our legislators don't want to come to that realization, but they don't. But being educated at the state level, we need to understand how the process works. So we encourage the people and I'm just so proud of the people in our state coalition. I'm so proud of them coming forward. They're from all the way from Knoxville to Memphis, and it's a long state.
It's a long state. That's a very long state. I've driven across it several times.
And they're bringing their expertise or their interests to the table. They've done such great work, but you start by getting a group of people educated. And the place we tell them to start is on your vote, on your national working group calls, because that's where so many people have done the hard work. That's where we connect on the national level on some of the good work like we did today on what's happening. We get such good reports. And then we start the hard work in our state to do the same. And so today, I had hardly had to talk. It was so great. We had a great voter roll update, what's happening in our state. We had the whole citizens research, what was going on with that and how that plays in. And Ned was on the call. And everybody is now that it takes a while to get everybody firing on all cylinders. But then the next thing is to say, you've got to be educated on your law. Because every state is different. It's not a one size fits all, and it shouldn't be. But when you go into your state, we talked about this today, to get the LexisNexis, whatever your code is, find out. And find out if there's rules that are promulgated to enforce, because not always. And sometimes they're not good. And sometimes they haven't been updated. But then you have to educate your legislators. So you don't take take 20 activists and just set them loose all over Cordell Hall in Nashville. You'll scare them. You take some educated people. They educate them. And we're going to start a listening tour summer, I think, here. I want to ask, tell me, as a legislator, tell me where we're going wrong on this. Tell me what is your problem with this? Let me explain to you some other laws in other states. That's the other major thing that the EIN does for us. It brings us a wealth of information from other states, where it succeeded and where the pitfalls are. And we have learned a lot and gleaned. And I just today had a conversation offline after our call that we had to get information on the SAVE program. And Virginia has done some outstanding work. Florida has done some outstanding work. And I could pass that legislation along, because we have to change things at the legislative level. Eventually, it has to be changed there.
So when you're talking about the SAVE program, you're talking about the verification of citizenship database.
Yes. Yeah. So that we know, we passed legislation last year in Tennessee that illegals couldn't vote. But then on the other hand, we watered down the legislation that the Secretary of State must check for people who are illegal that aren't signing up. I mean, we're talking more DACA, those kinds of citizens. And so that got watered down. So we were trying to just flip it back to where it was. And so Virginia helped me.
Yeah, well, that's so important, because we learn and we also see patterns. We see there's a pattern going on right now that really started in 2021. But because now citizens are engaged in the process, going to election offices, asking questions, obtaining copies of voter rolls, looking at the voter rolls, looking at the process, and basically saying, we want to be here, we want to know what's going on. That's been perceived as a threat by many, many election officials. And even if they didn't feel threatened, they're told they should be threatened by having citizens. And as you say, our mantra is always be right, but be polite and be persistent. But this narrative that somehow having citizens involved in the election process, that they should criminalize threats, harassment, or intimidation. And even the Justice Department had this set up this hotline. Mm-hmm. Where people, election officials, could call in and say if they were feeling threatened or harassed or intimidated. And there were about 1,100 calls over 14 months, which is actually not that many, but in any event. And of those, there were fewer than 100 that they even felt were worthy of subsequent investigation. And of those that were investigated, they had 4 prosecutions. None of them involved citizens engaged at the election office. None of them involved poll observers. There were, I think, 2 Instagram posts and 2 phone calls. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some people think that it's the threat. If a FOIA request is a threat or an intimidation or harassment. So
Well, we did have problems beginning in our last primary here and in an election in November, where all of a sudden we start training poll watchers. We took the cue from whatever Virginia did and hundreds of poll watchers. And we had a hard time getting them approved to be able to be at the polls. And it was even the political parties not wanting to do it. And I was like, what's going on? And then I started paying attention to what you just said, the trends, the pushback, even getting poll workers, they say they need them. Our people sign up and they don't get called. So we've got to find out where is that exactly coming from, trying to make it more difficult. Transparency should be, even the Carter Institute says, elections should be transparent, they should be simple, and they should be auditable. Those three things. If we're not going to be transparent, you breed more disrespect and more concern, and people don't have confidence. So we want them to understand that we're there to help and to make it a better process for everybody, because I don't understand where that's coming from, except to say we want to keep it behind the curtain. And that's never a good idea. So we have to learn, how are we going to change that narrative? Because we had the problem right here in Tennessee.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that some states are doing, some election integrity groups are doing, or they're pushing for a poll observer's bill of rights or voter's bill of rights, then that one of those things, the purpose of the poll observer is to observe the election process. And all but two states have a statutory provision for poll observers. And you're supposed to have access to be able, meaningful access, to be able to see the voting process, to be the tabulation process, the check-in process, not to interfere, but just to observe and to report back on what you've seen. And I will say this, people say, well, it didn't do as much good in 2022 as we thought it would. Well, yes, it did. Mm-hmm. Yes, it did. And, you know, I'll just take Maricopa County for an example. We had hundreds and hundreds of people, volunteers, and some of them even moved into positions as working the polls, even during that process. And so when this, and they saw, and they documented everything they saw. They couldn't change it, but they documented it. So now when you have the chief election officials of Maricopa County saying that everything was fine on November 8th of 2022, no problem, it was all resolved. Well, we have hundreds and hundreds of eyewitness accounts saying, au contraire, everything was not fine. And now we know what needs to be fixed. Now dealing with those two officials to make sure that they are fixed. But they, you know, look, they have these giant voting centers. Mm-hmm. That was where the problems were. The printers could not keep up with printing the ballots. And, you know, it's like Starbucks. You go in and you get a customized ballot. And so, right.
Well, that's bad. And that's so simple. And it's such a, it's like you said, it's a historical understanding of the foundation of our country. And when Benjamin Franklin said, ma'am, I gave you a republic if you can keep it, that just begs self-governance. And we have been all guilty, I think, over the years of just delegating that role out. Well, citizens are engaged at the school level to the election office. And I think that's good. And I think that it should be applauded. We had legislation passed just yesterday that got all this fanfare that high schoolers will be notified when they're eligible to vote. I wrote and said, if they had a civics class, they would know that. We don't need a law. We need to inform people. It's their obligation to keep the republic, because it's a privilege. Voting is a privilege that not every country has. And that is critical to get that kind of partnership back with our government.
Well, I also think, you know, that when I talk about expanding the electorate, that's the left's mantra. Well, that for them, that means including non-citizens. That includes 15 and 16-year-olds, 16, 17-year-olds. They're talking about lowering the voting age and letting non-citizens vote. The D.C. City Council passed a law that allows citizens of the China, the CCP, Russian citizens, living in D.C., it allows them to vote in D.C. elections. Now, how crazy is that? But they would say that because I say, well, actually, I think that American citizens should be the only people who should vote in the D.C. elections, or San Francisco, or New York City, or all the places where they're expanding the electorate to include non-citizens, they would call that vote suppression. And I would say, I plead guilty. I think I should we should suppress non-citizens and keep them from voting in our elections. I plead guilty.
Well, we need to be the gatekeepers, because otherwise it becomes a toehold, becomes a foothold, becomes a stronghold. If it's allowed in one place, it's going to spread like wildfire. And we have to use good laws that are happening around this country so that I can take it in Tennessee and say, look at the good work Virginia's done. Look at the good work Missouri's done. Look at the good work Michigan is in, Illinois, Ohio. And then we are on the same page and we can get our election officials to work together. And we have to watch, we have to be gatekeepers, because who's training those people? Because again, we found in Shelby County, they went to Pasadena, these election workers, and were trained by very left-leaning groups. Who's training the trainer?
Well, that's right. And we're seeing that all over the country, because as I say, they've had this all to themselves, and we haven't been there, but now we're there and we're not going to go away.
No, we're not. Thank you so much for everything you do for us.
Well, thank you, Kathy. I really appreciate what you're doing. What are your primary areas that you're going to be focused on over the next little bit?
Precincts is number one. I'm sticking to that. I'm actually going to look and see if we have to litigate that, because it is pretty clear and it crosses over to so many aspects of the election process. It's not just the where you vote. It's the poll books and the voter registration is an issue. I'm also going to be concentrating on the loopholes on our voter registration drives by nonprofit organizations, and also looking to look at the other aspects of what is happening with technology that we can use to our benefit too. And then I'm trying to learn as much as I can as I'm on your calls.
Well, we appreciate all that you're doing. Those are very, like I say, you're leading the way in the country on precinct voting. And that's a really good model for other states. They need to look at what their statutes and their constitutions say. And I think we need to start a movement for precinct voting. So good for you. We'll be helping out every way that we can.
Thank you, Kalita, for everything you guys do.
Thank you. And thank you so much for taking time to be with us. I know you've had a very busy day. Every day is very busy, but thank you for your commitment to saving our elections and helping to save the republic that Dr. Franklin told that woman in Philadelphia that he and the others had given to us, if we can keep it.
We can keep it. Thank you. Thank you, Kalita.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. That's this episode of Who's Counting with Kalita Mitchell. We hope that you will subscribe. Visit our website at www.whoscounting.us. Sign up to help. If you live in Tennessee, there's a coalition there waiting for you to join them and help them do all this great work they're doing. But do sign up to subscribe to the podcast, but sign up to become part of the election integrity movement. We have coalitions and task forces and working groups all over the country. So subscribe, share the podcast, and join us again next week for another episode of Who's Counting. Thanks so much, and we'll see you again. Counting with Kalita Mitchell, the podcast about America's elections. Please help us fight big tech censorship. Like and subscribe to this podcast, and be sure to share it with your friends. You can become part of this election integrity movement by signing up to join the Election Integrity Network. Go to whoscounting.us. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Election Integrity Network.